Turn in your Bible to 1 Samuel, chapter number 17. 1 Samuel 17. Probably the most well-known Bible story in the Old Testament. It would have to be what? David. In the New Testament, what would be probably the most favorite Sunday school story in the New Testament? I can't hear good.
Birth of Christ? Is that it?
Probably one of them, but I think maybe Zacchaeus in the New Testament. I know they stood out to me as a boy. You folks are fortunate in this church to have the pastor and assistant pastor and their families. There are a lot of churches that would love to have what you have. These men are exemplary as to what the ministry is all about. And their wives are real preachers' wives. They take their place like they're supposed to, but they carry themselves well. And so you folk are blessed. And we've had a good time with you this weekend. And I'm going to make this one quick and short tonight. Most of the time when we think about this chapter, it's always, why did David choose five stones? Well, one preacher said he got four brothers. I've always said the reason he chose five stones is that he was going to give it five times, or try it five times. If he failed after five times, you just well to quit and go home. But he was going to give it at least five times to get the job done. But because he went in the power of the Lord, it only took one to do it. And if we go in that kind of power, we don't need the reserves. But just in case we didn't get prayed up like we ought to be, pick up four more and just keep throwing until the job's done. But I want to have you to look at something else. Look at verse number 2. It says, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, there's all kind of controversy as to how tall he was. You get into commentaries, nobody can figure out exactly what a cubit is and what a span is. They speculate. But I think the most common speculation is he was 9'6" tall. And so we'll just say that's how tall it was. But the word champion doesn't mean that he was just a hero or a winner. It can also mean that he is a mediator or a go-between the two armies. In other words, the Philistine chose one of their men to go out and negotiate with Israel. And his negotiation was, I defy you, the army of Israel. In other words, I don't even respect you. But if you've got a man over there on your side that can come over here and whip me or kill me, then we'll serve you. Or at least the rest of them will serve you. And if we kill your man, then you will serve us. The thing I want us to do tonight is to look at some practical things, some lessons that we can learn. David comes on the scene as a young boy. I don't know how old he was. Could have been 18, 19 years old. He has already been to Saul's palace and played the instrument for him, had the javelin thrown at him, And he's left them up there. I wouldn't play music under those circumstances either. And so he left them up there and went back home with his father and his family and his brothers. A lot of the commentators believe that David comes on the scene that this war is going to take place after Saul has been rejected by God. And also rejected by Samuel. Samuel's turned his back on him, won't have anything else to do with him because God has rejected him. And David comes on the scene. His daddy sends him down there with some food for his brothers and a little present for the captain of the host that his boys are serving under. He sends all that down to him. And when David gets down there, he arrives just at the time that both armies are standing on each side of the mountain and Goliath walks down in the middle of the valley. And he listens to what that man says. I defy the armies of Israel. In other words, I hate you. I despise you. I challenge you. I double dog dare you, or whatever you want to call it, to send somebody down here. And David looks around to see what's happening. And he says, is nobody going to do anything? Somebody says to him, well, son, Saul has said that the man that kills Goliath, he will enrich him or enhance him with many riches, and he'll give him one of his daughters. And he'll make his father's house free in Israel. Now, I'm assuming that word free means that they will be free from taxes, be free from responsibility for military or whatever. In other words, it'll be a good way to live. And I kind of think when David says he will do what? He will enrich the man that kills Goliath. He will give him the daughter. Is there not a cause in Israel? I mean, this man has defied, and notice what David says, the armies of the living God. Goliath said, the armies of Israel. David says, the armies of the living God. David is looking at this as a confrontation against his Father, his God in heaven. So when David comes on the scene, the first thing he does is he recognizes they've got a powerful enemy there in front of them. Somebody has said that the Philistines were loud and proud and large and in charge. I don't know. I mean, some preachers try to really get a rhythm on the preaching, I guess. But he was a loud mouth. But hasn't Satan always been that way? Yes. Yea, hath God said to Eve? Today in this world that we're living in, the wheel that gets greased is the one that squeaks the loudest. And we Christians have kind of hung our heads, tucked our tails, and run, and let the unsaved world do the squealing and the hollering, and they're getting what they want. We're complaining about it, but they're getting what they want. That's exactly what David recognized here. Here's a belligerent, arrogant, egotistical, ungodly, wicked representative of Satan, shaking his fist in the face of God and God's people and saying, I defy you. Send somebody over here to fight. And instead of anybody returning the challenge, they all became afraid, and for 40 days they've sat on one side of the mountain looking at the Philistines on the other side of the mountain. I believe it's time that we as a church, we sing that song, the church militant, onward Christian soldiers, marches the church of God. That must have been years ago. And I know that there were some pastors in Virginia in the early days of this country, if they had not stood up to the government, we would not have had a Bill of Rights. But they met with James Madison, and he wanted their vote, the Baptist congregations. And they met with him and said, Mr. Madison, if you do not draw up a Bill of Rights that gives us the freedom to worship, then we'll not vote for you. And James Madison drew up that Bill of Rights. Those preachers were put in jail because they were not licensed under the Church of England, the Anglican Church. They were put in jail. James Ireland preached with his hands outside the jail, reaching out and preaching. And while he's preaching, men standing under the window take knives and reach up and cut his hands. But our Baptist forefathers were the ones that challenged the enemy, challenged the government. If they did not set it up right, they would not vote for them. And yet during the last election, most of our Christians, the national election, most of our Christians stayed home. Didn't vote. Well, preacher, what are you going to vote for? There's a Mormon and a Muslim. I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I know of two Baptist preachers that voted for the Muslim because they said they absolutely would not vote for a Mormon. And by the way, I'm not calling him a Muslim out of context. I have heard it from his own mouth on a video on YouTube. David came on the scene. Are we just going to stand here and let Goliath challenge? Well, immediately, the weak, kneed army, including his brothers and his friends and his relatives, turned on him like a wild man. What are you doing down here anyway? Who did you... You left the sheep out there in the wilderness by themselves. No, I left them in the hands of someone else. My daddy sent me down here. I'm not down here just to get away to see the armies fighting. Every boy likes to see little war movies. And he had not come down there to look at the war movie. He had been sent down there, but he had providentially been sent down there by his daddy. Why do you say providentially, brother? Because he's the only one that's going to challenge Goliath. God wants him taken out. David has already been anointed to be the next king. Now, he's not going around with a t-shirt on that says, I will be the next king. He's not proud of it. But he comes down and he challenges Goliath. And you know the rest of the story. But instead of the army or the folk there, his relatives and the soldiers being glad about it, his brothers turn on him and challenge him. Someone has said, And I don't remember who the coach was. He said the best defense is a strong offense. In other words, if you whip him on the offense, you don't have to worry about putting up the defense. Get out there and whip him. When you're on the move, keep the ball moving. The story is told of a Civil War general that gave a challenge for his men to move up, advance on the enemy. One of the regiments didn't move. So he came back later and asked the commanding officer, said, "Why didn't you folks move out when I told you to?" And the commanding officer said, "General, it was my opinion that the valor of my men, if they had gone out to fight, the valor of my men would have put them in direct contact with the enemy." Man, you don't need to win a war when you've got generals or commanding officers like that. What's the army for? You say, "Well, it's for defense." No, the army is to engage the enemy. And so that's what David did. And I'm preaching this tonight primarily that I think it's time that we got over this business that the separation of church and state means that a Christian has nothing to do with politics. It's time that we got back in the halls of Raleigh, or the halls of the House there in Raleigh, and into the halls of Congress. In fact, my preacher has just come out like you wouldn't believe. My pastor. They are now going, several pastors from my area and all over the state are going to Raleigh when the North Carolina House is in session. They're going up there once a month. They have a little meal up there, and then they go to the different representatives and just walk into the office. "Hey, how are you doing? I'm Pastor so-and-so. I'm from down in Kinston, North Carolina. We just wanted to come by and let you know we're praying for you. By the way, do you have some prayer requests that we could pray with you about?" And my pastor said, "You would not believe it how many Christians they run into." One lady said, "Oh, am I glad to see you." She said, "You don't know the pressure that we're under up here to pass legislation. Please pray for me." She's out of an independent Baptist church. And she's up there as a representative. Let's get back involved. Let's get involved. In fact, my pastor's leaving tomorrow for Washington, D.C. They'll be there 2 days. There is a slew of pastors from all over the East Coast that are going up into Washington doing the same thing. Going by your congressmen and senators' offices and praying with them. Now, they don't get much help from the liberal side, but those on the conservative side are glad to see them. It's going to make a difference. David made a difference. Nobody thought he would make a difference. Now, David didn't come in there and criticize those fellows for not engaging Goliath. He didn't criticize Saul for not going out and fighting him. But David says, "I've got a solution, and I'm not going to ask anybody to participate in it but myself. I'm going to go challenge him. I'm going to kill him. In the name of the Lord, I'm going to do it. By God's help, I'm going to do it." Well, then everybody, "Well, son, you've not done much killing. I've killed a lion, and I've killed a bear. In fact, I took the lion by the hair of his chinny." No, that's another story. Well, it did say that he said, "I caught the lion by his beard." That would be the hair of his chinny chin chin. Sure it would. And he said, I killed him. God gave me. He said, God delivered me out of the paw of the bear and out of the paw of the lion. And God will deliver me out of the hand of Goliath. Saul said, son, you can't go out there dressed like you're dressed. I heard one preacher preach that why did David go out with a sling? That was a military weapon. What do you mean a military weapon? He's been a slinging ever since he was a little boy. He's been practicing ever since he's big enough to put it on the end of his thumb. You hang that thing on the end of your thumb, you put the other string between your thumb, and that end is on the thumb, you put a rock in the pouch, and you sling it around and around and around and get your trajectory to where when you come off the side, you let the string loose and the rock goes straight ahead. He is an expert. He's been guarding sheep. That's all he's done. Challenging little squirrels to run down a limb. Being made fun of by those little squirrels because he missed them. And he'd tell them to go back down and come down again and let's see what happens. And they put on their little Nike tennis shoes and they back up to the far end of the tree. And they come down there just smoking the bark behind them. And this time, he knocks them off the limb. And that little squirrel pulls out a handkerchief and starts waving it. I mean, why did he was confident that God had trained him and prepared him for this job. Mordecai said to Esther, did you not come to the kingdom for this particular time? David did the job. Then everybody jumps in then. His brothers and everybody start running Philistines. I mean, it's big time now. Everybody's slinging. Once Goliath was killed, David didn't look at 9'6". All he looked at was a little spot 1 inch by 1 inch by 1 inch by 1 inch. And he just kept his eyes on that. And he put him down and took his own sword. I like that. Took out Goliath's own sword. I believe it was all he could do to pull it out and get it raised up. And maybe that thing is moving around. But he takes it and cuts his head off. You see, preacher, there is no more opportunity for the church. You ought to quit then. Jesus said, occupy till I come. And that means don't quit. Just keep on keeping on. Make a racket. Do what you can. And that was the signal. That's the bell, isn't it, brother? Let's pray. Our Father, give us the kind of courage that David had. As a young man, he had more discernment, more spiritual understanding than the older folk out there on that battlefield. The older folk didn't want to rock the boat. They were afraid to challenge Goliath. They looked at the weapon of mass destruction. They were afraid of him. But David came as a young man, realizing God has already delivered me several times, and he can do it again. And help us not to forget that. Lord, please help us to stay in the battle, against the devil. He's going to do everything he can in these last few remaining days before you come back to destroy the church, destroy every person's testimony that he can. And I pray that you'll help us not to be those guilty of falling by the wayside. Please help us to stand. And having done all, as Paul said, to still stand.